This is the Relic Radio Show, old-time radio entertainment still standing the test of time, from RelicRadio.com. This is the Relic Radio Show. Welcome back, everyone. Back with our normal variety programming today. I hope you enjoyed what we had going on for Halloween. If you missed any of it, just go to RelicRadio.com/Halloween. You'll find all the October programming listed there. But today, we're going to hear from The Adventures of the Falcon and The Case of the Unsilent Butler from March 11th, 1951. Then it's Incredible But True and Trail of the Werebeast. We'll finish off today's show with Cloak and Dagger and Swastika on the Windmill from July 30th, 1950.
Hello? Yes, this is the Falcon speaking. Oh, Vivian. I'm glad you called. You'll have to pass me by tonight, Angel. I'm all tied up with some practical joker. Mm-hmm. This boy thinks the only way to get a bang out of life is by using a gun.
This is Ed Hurley, friends, inviting you to listen to The Adventures of the Falcon, starring Les Damon. You met the Falcon first in his best-selling novels. Then you saw him in his thrilling motion picture series. Now join him on the air when the Falcon solves The Case of the Unsilent Butler. And now, The Case of the Unsilent Butler.
It's early afternoon in New York, and in the swank offices of the Conrad Oil Company, the president of the outfit thumbs through a stack of correspondence. It's quite obvious that Mr. Conrad is a big operator, and if you're wondering how he got there, just watch him in action.
What is it, Miss Rogers?
I'm sorry to bother you, Mr. Conrad, but there's a Daniel Lyons here to see you.
Daniel Lyons?
He used to be with the Cooper Detective Agency. He says he has a 3:30 appointment.
Oh, yes, yes. Send him in.
Mr. Conrad will see you now, Mr. Lyons.
Miss Rogers?
Yes, sir.
See that we're not disturbed.
Mr. Conrad?
That's right.
I'm Danny Lyons.
This is indeed a pleasure, sir. Won't you sit down?
Thanks.
You're probably wondering why I sent for you.
Now that you mention it, I am. Your company has its own staff of troubleshooters.
Well, the assignment I had in mind calls for peculiar talents, and I don't think our boys are equipped to handle it.
What makes you think I am?
Weren't you the detective whose license was revoked for your part in the Norden affair?
Yeah, but I was framed.
I'm terribly sorry to hear that.
What do you mean?
The man with an imagination capable of figuring out a method of swindling Mr. Norden should go far.
Could you use someone like that?
I could.
Then I'm your boy. What's the pitch?
Mr. Lyons, I don't know how much you know about the oil business.
Very little.
Have you any idea how we locate a well?
I always assumed you just kept digging and hoped for the best.
Oh, it's a little more scientific than that. However, there's still a great deal of guesswork involved. So much so that last year alone, my company lost $6 million sinking new wells.
Oh, that's tough, but that's one of the gambles of your racket, isn't it?
Yes, indeed. However, 3 months ago, an engineer named Robert Butler invented a device that takes practically 80% of the guesswork out of locating oil wells. He called it the Butler Petroleum Detector.
A gimmick like that ought to be worth a fortune.
It is.
Then it seems to me I'd get hold of this Butler character.
You should give me credit for that much intelligence, sir. But you see, Robert Butler died in an accident 2 weeks ago.
What happened to the invention?
He left it to his brother, Arthur, who unfortunately contracted to sell it to an independent prospector named Just Stevens before he heard from us.
What if he did sell it to Stevens? Couldn't you arrange with Arthur Butler to give you a set of plans?
There are no plans. They were all destroyed in the accident that killed the inventor. The only thing that exists is a 12-inch working model. Need I add, Mr. Lyons, as such, it's extremely valuable.
What do you call valuable?
If we got it instead of Stevens, it would be worth $100,000.
And no questions asked, Mr. Conrad?
And no questions asked, Mr. Lyons.
Taxi! Taxi! All right, driver. Let's go to the... Oh, excuse me a moment. Say, mister.
Me?
Yeah.
What's the trouble?
No trouble. My name's Arthur Butler. I like to make things easy for people.
Huh?
I got a date with a fella named Jess Stevens.
What?
I'm supposed to meet him at Mike Warren's apartment at the Belmore.
What's that supposed to mean to me?
Well, it should mean something. You've been trailing me ever since Friday, and seeing as how I'm only going to be in town another few hours, I wouldn't want to lose you now. So long. All right, driver, let's go.
Is that the right time, Mike?
More or less, Stevens.
What's keeping our friend, Mr. Butler?
Now, relax, Jess. He's only 5 minutes late.
He'll probably be here.
What did I tell you?
Come in.
Oh, good afternoon, gentlemen.
Oh, hi, Butler. We were just talking about you.
I'm sorry I'm late.
Oh, that's okay. I just didn't want to miss my plane to San Francisco. I've got to leave in half an hour. Can we get going?
No, I don't see why not.
All right, Mike, suppose you take over.
Well, I don't think there's much for us to do. Did you bring the model of the petroleum detector with you, Butler?
Yes, sir. I got it right in this grip, chained to my wrist.
All right, get your key ready. According to the contract, you were to get $25,000. Stevens gave you $1,000 when the contract was signed, and right here I have his check for the balance.
Mm-hmm. Is it certified?
No, but I can assure you it's good.
Well, how do I know that?
Hmm?
Well, this is on a San Francisco check. I'm sorry, gentlemen, it won't do.
Now, look here, Butler. We made a deal.
Take it easy, Jess. I'll handle this. Listen, Butler. That contract is legal and binding. You try to renege on it.
Oh, I have no intention of reneging, Mr. Warren. But until I see that $24,000 balance in cash, I'm not turning over this model.
And where can we cash a check this size on Saturday afternoon?
Well, that's your problem.
Mm-hmm. All I can say, Butler, is that you picked an awfully queer time to turn suspicious.
Maybe I did, but you can't blame me. I don't know you people too well. And, meaning no offense, sir, but what guarantee have I that Mr. Stevens isn't trying to flim-flam me?
Why, you...
Jess, easy, easy. What do you mean, Butler?
Just what I said. If everything's on the up and up about this deal, why is Mr. Stevens in such a hurry to leave New York? And why has he had me followed?
Followed?
Have you had a tail on him, Jess?
Well, help me, Mike. The guy's crazy.
You must be imagining things, Butler.
Don't tell me that. I've seen the same gentleman too often. Yesterday, he posed as a bill collector. This morning, he was a telephone repairman.
What did he look like?
Well, he's a heavy-set lad. Must weigh about 210 pounds. Brown curly hair. Oh, and across the bridge of his nose was a small scar.
Sounds like Danny Lyons.
Lyons? Who's he?
The private detective who recently lost his license for being mixed up in some swindle.
Mm-hmm. Now tell me I'm imagining things.
Now look, Butler, Stevens didn't hire Lyons.
Well, then who did?
I don't know.
Maybe I can guess.
Who?
Carl Conrad.
Carl Conrad? Who's he?
Oh, one of my competitors. Listen, Mike, is this man Lyons dangerous?
Enough.
Then I want you to leave that model here, Butler.
You're crazy. I'm not letting this out of my sight till I collect that $24,000 I got coming.
You'll have it Monday morning, just as soon as my bank opens in San Francisco.
Fair enough. You'll get the detector then.
Well, the least you can do in the meantime is to hire a bodyguard.
Don't you worry about me, Mr. Warren. I'd look after myself.
Oh, sure. Last man I heard say that was guest of honor at an autopsy last week. All right, Butler, we'll supply the bodyguard.
Yes?
Is John Webster in?
Do you have an appointment?
Well, I think he'll see me. Where is he in there?
Just a second.
It's all right. I'm an old friend of the family.
Come back here. You can't walk in like
that. Hey, what goes on here?
Hello, Johnny.
Mike Waring.
I tried to stop him, Mr. Webster. But
that's okay, Pat. This is the Falcon. We used to play hockey together.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't know.
How could you?
Sit down, Mike.
Thanks.
I haven't seen you in months.
How's it going, Johnny?
Oh, it couldn't be better. Mm-hmm. Right, Pat?
Oh, yes. Everybody seems to want to hire Mr. Webster.
Mm-hmm. Well, what about the...
The furniture?
Well, I was referring to the lack of it.
Oh, we took it out. We ordered a new batch. You know, that modern chrome stuff. Pat thinks it's kind of flashy for a private dick's office, but I didn't. What do you say, Mike?
Well, I say I'm awfully glad to hear you're doing so well.
Yeah. I'm working on a case now that's a humdinger.
Uh-huh.
$5,000 fee.
Well, I guess I'll have to find myself another boy.
What do you mean?
Oh, I had a little routine bodyguarding job, but I could see you wouldn't be interested.
Whoa. Sit down.
No, I really got to go, Johnny.
Not until I get that job.
But this would only last 48 hours and pay $20 a day.
That's 40 more than Pat and I saw all week.
Oh?
I was bluffing, Mike. I haven't had a case in months. Do I get yours?
Sure, Johnny.
Thanks. What's the story?
Well, there's a man named Arthur Butler staying at the Belvedere. He'll give you all the dope.
He the boy you want me to keep an eye on?
Mm-hmm. You're not to let him out of your sight for a minute. He's got an oil detector gadget on him that's worth a fortune.
You expecting me?
Yeah, but I better call him, tell him you're on your way over.
Oh, Mike.
Huh?
It don't work. The phone company and me are feuding.
You mean they're sore because you don't pay your bills?
Is that ridiculous?
Oh. Okay, Johnny, I'll phone him from outside.
There's a booth in the lobby.
Yeah, I'll see you. So long, Pat. But nice knowing you.
Thank you.
Well, baby, what do you think?
I don't like it, Johnny.
Why?
Don't ask me. I just don't like it.
Don't be silly, Pat. I got a hunch this is where our luck starts to change.
On a $40 case?
Guys have made fortunes in this racket starting with less. I wonder how much that gadget this Butler character owns is worth.
Oh, go away.
Look, will you please go away? There's nobody home.
That you, Warren?
So sorry, Mr. Waring, not to go to Saskatchewan.
Now, don't be funny.
Huh? Who is this?
Arthur Butler.
Oh, do you realize what time it is, Butler?
I'm sorry to disturb you, but I wanted to congratulate you and your buddy, Mr. Stevens, for that cute stunt you pulled.
Stunt?
Yeah, sending around that Johnny Webster.
What's the matter with Johnny?
Well, that all depends on your point of view. From yours, he couldn't have done much better.
Look, Butler, you're not making sense. Let me talk to Webster. Put him on.
Well, that's a nice act, fella, but it won't sustain.
What are you talking about?
Your friend Johnny skipped.
Johnny skipped? What about the model?
Oh, don't feel badly. He didn't overlook it. He's got it all right, but I want it back, Warren. And if I don't hear from you within 1 hour, you'll be hearing plenty from me.
Now, back to the adventures of the Falcon. An hour has passed since Arthur Butler informed Mike that Johnny Webster removed not only himself, but the Butler petroleum detector as well. Now in his hotel room, Mr. Butler seems strangely annoyed.
Well, what do you got to say for yourself, Warren? You told me this Johnny Webster was trustworthy. You said with him on the job, I had nothing to worry about.
How did you learn that he skipped, Butler?
I woke up at 3 a.m. and discovered this.
That's the chain you had on the grip, isn't it?
Yeah.
You always sleep with a chain to your wrist?
Only since I got to New York. But as you can see, somebody took a pair of wire clippers to it.
Where did you leave Johnny before you went to bed?
On a sofa. He said he was going to read for a while, or so he claimed.
Well, now listen, Butler. You've got to believe me. I recommended Johnny Webster in good faith. I'll get back that model for you.
When?
As soon as I can find him.
Yeah, well, that may be years, and I can't afford to wait. I'm going to the police, Warren.
Now, you don't want to do that.
Don't I? You just watch.
Look, you're wrong, Butler. Publicity is the last thing you want in this case.
No use talking. I made up my mind. Did you ask your cab to wait?
Nope.
No, there's usually one down at the corner.
Well, seems like you're out of luck.
Taxi! Hey, taxi!
Wait a minute, Butler.
I said you're not going to talk me out of this.
No. Look over there.
Look over where?
That Chevy parked across the street.
Well, what about it?
That's Johnny Webster's heap.
What?
I'm sure of it. If I remember correctly, the rear right fender was off.
If this is some kind of a gag, Warren...
Well, what would be the point? What did I tell you? This is Johnny's car, all right. Now, why do you suppose he left it here?
Maybe he ran out of gas.
No. What Johnny ran out of was luck. Look behind the front seat.
What do you mean? Oh.
That's right. He's dead. And judging by that knife on his back, it wasn't due to an overdose of sleeping pills.
Yes?
I'm looking for a party named Danny Lyons.
Lyons?
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, Mr.
Waring, Mike Waring.
You have the wrong apartment. There's no such person here.
Are you Carl Conrad?
That's right. Come in.
Thank you. I was given to understand that Lyons is working for you.
Where did you hear that?
From the usual reliable source.
Well, you know how trustworthy they generally are.
Yes, well, this came from a friend of mine, a man named Jess Stevens. Ever hear of him?
Stevens? I don't believe I have.
Now, he's in the oil business, too, though not on the scale that you people are.
Oh, of course. He prospects for oil on his own, what we call a wildcatter.
Uh-huh.
And Mr. Stevens led you to believe that this Lyons chap was in my employ?
That's right.
Doing what?
Trying to get hold of the Butler petroleum detector.
Believe me, Mr. Waring, I've been in this business 35 years, And I never heard of that. Just what is that contraption supposed to do?
Take a lot of the guesswork out of locating new oil fields.
It must be extremely valuable.
Yes, must be. Someone knifed a private detective named Johnny Webster to get it last night.
Surely, Mr. Waring, you don't think...
Yes, that... I do.
I don't know whether you're aware of it, sir, but you're being very insulting.
If I am, it's entirely intentional.
Then you can understand under the circumstances I must ask you to leave.
Oh, sure. But I'll be back.
You needn't bother, Mr. Waring. First of all, I don't believe any such object as the Butler Petroleum Detector exists.
Well, that's your privilege.
Oh, just a moment, sir.
Yeah?
I wouldn't want you to go off feeling I'm one of those diehards who doesn't believe there's anything new under the sun.
No, of course not.
As I said, I don't believe any such invention exists. However, I'd be willing to pay $100,000 to the man who can furnish the necessary proof that I'm wrong. I hope I'll be seeing you, Mr. Waring.
Now, where do we go from here, Mr. Waring, or don't you know?
Well, I'm convinced that Conrad was lying to me, Pat. But I'm sure he doesn't have the Butler detector yet. He practically offered me $100,000 to turn it over. On the other hand, I'd swear it came as no surprise to him that your boss was murdered.
Well, it came as no surprise to me either. I told Johnny I didn't want him to get mixed up in this.
Why?
Isn't that obvious?
Well, no, who could foresee that Johnny would be hurt? This was a routine job. As a secretary, you ought to know that.
I only know he's dead.
Kind of went for the guy, didn't you?
What do you think?
I think if I never accomplish another thing, I'm going to find this killer. Now, who knew that Johnny got the job to nurse Butler along?
No one.
You sure there wasn't a leak?
I'm positive. Johnny left this office a couple of minutes after you did.
Did you tell anyone?
Did I tell anyone?
Inadvertently or otherwise.
You've got your nerve.
Well, I'm sorry, Pat, but I can't afford to overlook any possibilities. How long did you work for him?
That's none of your business.
And he couldn't have been paying you very much. If my memory serves me right, he said this was the first case he'd had in months.
You think you can browbeat me because I'm a woman? I notice you haven't tried it with Danny Lyons.
I haven't been able to locate Mr. Lyons yet.
Well, what about your friend Jet Stevens?
What about him?
Well, it seems to me if you're going to ask personal questions, he ought to take his turn in answering them. How well do you know him?
Well enough. I was in the army with him.
So what does that prove? Just because a man wears a uniform, does that make him a solid citizen? Suppose Butler was right.
About what?
That check Stevens tried to give him for $24,000. Suppose it was rubber, and since Butler wouldn't accept it, Stevens knew that the only way he could get the model was to steal it. And Johnny caught him in the act.
Got it all figured out, haven't you?
Well, it makes as much sense as any theory I've heard you advance.
Yes, it does. Even I'll have to admit it's worth looking into. I'll let you know how I make out.
Hey, bartender. Bartender. Let me have a bourbon and water.
There you are, Jess.
No.
They told me at the desk I'd find you in the bar.
Anything new, Mike?
Well, yes, no. What do you say we squat, huh?
Yeah.
I've been doing a lot of legwork this morning.
Okay. You want a drink?
No, I'll sit this one out.
Say, bartender, serve that drink over here, will you? Well, what's the story, Mike? How long do you think it'll be before we can locate that model?
You seem more concerned about finding that than nabbing Webster's murderer.
Okay, if you want an honest answer, yes. I want to get my hands on that detector. To me, that's all that counts.
Yeah, well, let me tell you something, Jess. I don't care if I never see that miracle machine again. I'm only interested in one thing.
I'll bet you are. You've been in touch with Conrad, haven't you?
What's that supposed to mean?
Just what it sounded like. What'd he offer you?
You accusing me of selling you out?
All I know is you seem to have forgotten suddenly that you're supposed to be a friend of mine.
Yeah, well, friendship works two ways, Jess. We have a mutual agreement. I can drop you just as you can cancel me out.
Thanks for reminding me, Mike. I may have to do just that.
Just a second.
Hello, Lyons.
Mr. Conrad, what are you doing here?
Well, if that mountain wouldn't come to Muhammad, Muhammad must necessarily go to the mountain.
Well, I was keeping out of sight.
You might have at least phoned me, Lyons.
I had nothing to tell you.
Mike Waring had. He told me that a chap named Johnny Webster lost his life last night trying to prevent a theft from Butler's hotel room.
So?
So, I'm merely putting two and two together.
Sometimes you wind up with 22 that way. Let me ask you a question, Mr. Conrad. Suppose I told you I haven't got Butler's whatchamacallit.
I wouldn't believe you.
I thought you'd say that. How high will you go for it?
We made a bargain last week, Lyle.
Yeah, but the whole thing was strictly spec then. If I guarantee to bring it over to your place in an hour,
what would it be worth to you?
I still think the stipulated price of $100,000 was more than ample.
Will you go 50 more?
25, and that's my limit.
Okay. What time have you got now?
9 o'clock.
Go to your office, start counting it out. I'll see you at 10.
Now, back to the adventures of the Falcon.
An hour has passed since Danny Lyons promised to deliver the Butler petroleum detector to Mr. Conrad. Now, at Mike Waring's apartment, the Falcon is just returning home.
Come on in, Waring. The water's fine.
What are you doing in my apartment, Lyons?
Don't ask so many questions. Just shut the door like a good boy.
You mind pointing that gun elsewhere?
Now, don't tell me it makes you nervous.
Yes, very. You have no idea how easily those things go off.
What makes you think I don't?
Well, I assumed you preferred knives.
What kind of a crack is that?
I was thinking of Johnny Webster.
Now, listen, Waring. Don't get me any more annoyed than I am now. I made an appointment for 10 o'clock, and it's 5 after already.
That's too bad.
Yeah, I phoned my party a couple of minutes ago, and he's getting real impatient.
Well, don't let me keep you, fella.
You won't. Where's the thingamajig?
You mean the Butler petroleum detector?
Yeah.
I don't know, and what's more, I don't care.
Well, I care plenty. So open up, Waring.
Oh, careful, friend. I just had the suit pressed.
Now, listen, I never liked you, and I wouldn't need much excuse to part your hair with this cannon, so let's not have any smart answers. You understand?
No, I just can't help it. I used to be a
quiz kid. Let go.
Come on, Lyons, drop it.
I'll drop it, Waring, right where it does the most good.
Waring?
Waring.
Oh, cut it out, Butler.
You all right?
How can I tell with you slapping me silly?
I'm sorry. Can I get you anything?
Yeah, you wouldn't happen to have a spare head on you.
I'm afraid not. What happened?
Well, it'll take too long to tell you. How'd you find me?
I came up to see if you had any more information.
What about the police?
There's nothing new there.
You know if they've spoken to Pat Dryden yet?
Pat Dryden? Who's he?
It's a she. She was Johnny Webster's secretary.
Well, what's she got to do with this?
Well, she's a gal with plenty of ideas.
Hey, is she hooked up with Stevens? Because I'm convinced he's the boy I'm after. I'll bet you anything you want. He killed Webster and stole my model.
Now, look, Butler.
Oh, don't misunderstand me, Waring. I don't think you had anything to do with it.
Oh, thanks. What time have you got?
10:30. Why?
Because I've got a hunch. And with a little luck, I may be able to wrap this whole thing up in a couple of minutes.
Who are you calling?
Carl Conrad.
You're barking up the wrong tree.
I've been riding a merry-go-round for the past 24 hours. It's time I got lucky and caught the gold ring.
Hello?
Hello, that you, Conrad?
Yes.
Mike Waring.
I have nothing to say
now,
to you.
Don't hang up, Conrad. You'll be sorry. Remember that proposition you made me this afternoon?
No.
All right, I'll refresh your memory. You offered me $100,000 for the working model of the Butler petroleum detector.
I'm no longer interested, Mr. Waring.
What?
I don't care to buy.
I'll sell it for $75.
I guess there's only one way to convince you I'm not interested.
Hello, Conrad. Conrad! Well, he hung up.
Forget the number back.
No, there's no need to do that. I proved my point.
Oh? What was it?
Oh, I'm sorry, but I thought you knew. I was just proving that you killed Johnny Webster.
The one thing I can't decide, Mike, is just who owes whom an apology.
I suppose we call the honors even, Jess. We both made mistakes.
You sure you didn't make one in turning Arthur Butler over to the police?
Oh, no, there's no question about that. Butler killed Johnny, all right.
Why?
Well, to convince us that the detector had been stolen from him when it never had been.
But why should a man steal from himself?
No reason, except he could make a very handsome profit thereby.
I don't get it.
You know that contract you had with Butler?
Yes.
Well, after Butler signed it, Conrad offered him more for the model. But by then it was too late. Butler knew he couldn't break the contract with you, because you have sued and collected every penny he had. You follow me?
I think so. Is that why Butler refused to accept my check?
Sure, he knew it was good. He just wanted the stall. And that's when he decided on this brilliant scheme of robbing himself.
That was the only way he could weasel out of the contract.
Now you've got it. The Butler petroleum detector was unique. If it was stolen, there was nothing you could do about it. You couldn't ask him to turn over the plans because none existed.
I still don't see why he killed Johnny.
Well, he had to. With Webster on the scene every minute of the time, Butler's story of the theft would never stand up. But this way, with Johnny dead, it looked even better.
Yeah. But how did you learn the truth?
At 10 o'clock tonight, Conrad was ready to buy the model from Lyons. Now, Lyons didn't have it. Otherwise, he wouldn't have come to my place. And he couldn't have gotten it from me because I never had it to begin with.
So?
So when I phoned Conrad just half an hour later, he was no longer interested in the model. Not at any price. Well, that convinced me that Conried already had it. A man doesn't cool off like that. So the only one he could have bought it from was Butler. Once I hit on that, the rest was easy.
I see.
Yes, simple enough now. But we all should have realized it right at the beginning.
Why?
Well, you don't know your detective stories. In practically all of them, it's always the butler who did it. Good night, Jed.
Down through the ages, in all cultures and all countries, the belief has persisted that certain men are able to transform themselves into wild animals, into werewolves and were-tigers, that they prey upon domesticated stock and even upon other human beings. Lycanthropy, the scientists call this phenomena, and the mere fact that it has acquired a technical name would suggest that it is based on something more than primitive fantasy. But there is even better evidence than this. Witness, for example, the strange affair of Captain Choate and the elusive hyena.
He was a hunter and an adventurer, this Captain Choate of the Order of Distinguished Service. Himself, in October of 1918, sitting in a hut in a village of far-off Nigeria. Nor, since he was known and trusted by the natives there, is it surprising that their leader should confide in him the misfortunes that were afflicting the village.
Raiding hyenas, eh?
Yes, Captain. Or perhaps one hyena. He steals among us at night. He destroys everything. He has the body of an animal, but the brain of a man.
What?
You see, Captain, he is a man. At night, he transforms himself into a hyena. We know. We have followed his tracks, and always they lead to the next village. And always, just before they reach the village, they turn into human tracks.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I'm sure they do. Well, whatever he is, my friend, tonight we're going to get him.
That night, in the company of the tribal leader, Captain Choate set out to hunt down the hyena. When the two men reached the outskirts of the village, a bright moon was shining. They made their way cautiously through the treacherous swampland. For more than an hour, they walked thus, their every sense alert. And then suddenly...
Look, there he is. Lord, what a brute.
Some distance away, an enormous hyena was slinking furtively across a clearing, his great hulking form silhouetted in the moonlight. Captain Choate took careful aim.
Got him! Come along, hurry!
The two men rushed toward the clearing, but when they reached it, the hyena was gone.
Oh, I could have sworn I hit him squarely in the head.
There is blood on the ground here.
What's that lying in the middle there? Why, it looks like a... By George, it is, a jawbone. Come along, let's follow his tracks.
An easy trail to follow, for it was marked at regular intervals by great splotches of blood. It led directly to the neighboring village, and then it stopped abruptly. Exhausted and disappointed, they accepted the invitation of an aged villager to spend the night in his hut. When they awoke at sunrise, their host had vanished. He returned a few moments later in a state of great agitation.
What has happened, my friend?
It is Barlow. Pano is dead. He was my neighbor. He was wise man and mighty hunter.
The gods have cursed him with the sickness, eh?
No. He was not sick. He was killed with gun. Someone fired it in his face. His jawbone was shot away.
After that, the monstrous hyena never again was seen near the village. Nor did anyone ever learn the identity of the man who had killed the native Pano. That the animal and the man should have been one and the same creature is, of course, inconceivable. But what other explanation is there for this baffling story? A story incredible, but true.
Are you willing to undertake a dangerous mission behind the enemy lines, knowing you may never return alive?
What you have just heard is the question asked during the war to agents of the OSS, ordinary citizens who to this question answered, yes.
This is Cloak and Dagger.
espionage, international intrigue. These are the weapons of the OSS. In today's adventure, the swastika on the windmill, the role of Paul Halfen, an OSS agent in Holland, is played by Les Tremaine. The story is suggested by actual incidents recorded in the Washington files of the Office of Strategic Services. A story that can now be told.
My mouth was as dry as ashes. The palms of my hands were wringing wet. My revolver was drawn. I moved slowly, slowly along the dark hall. Everything I had been taught led up to this moment. The boards under my feet teetered. And for a terrifying moment, I almost lost my balance and fell backwards. Something was ahead of me. In a room along that dark passage, I sensed it more than anything else. And then I heard it.
Come ahead, there, Steven.
I stopped breathing until I passed that room and the voices of the hidden Germans almost slid past them to the end of the corridor. There was a Nazi stormtrooper in uniform right in front of me, blocking the exit. Well, fire! Fire! Fire again!
Good work, Paul. Well, that's it. You passed the test. Now the colonel wants to see you.
What I had just come through was a cleverly designed scare house that rivaled any Coney Island chamber of horrors for one-a-minute thrills. This was part of the training of an OSS agent, and it took place less than an hour's ride from Washington, D.C.
Lieutenant Halfond, at the present time, we have no information, and no way of getting information, on the disposition and plans of German troops in the Netherlands. We think they're up to New England, and from there, a submarine will take you to the coast of Holland.
The coast of Holland? To me, Holland was a little country where my Uncle Brom lived, where I visited when I was 12, where the windmills were now under the shadow of the swastika.
I guess we can surface about here. There's Mac on Holland. I want to take a look at Lieutenant Halfen.
Oh, thanks, Commander Spunning. Through the periscope of the submarine tuner, I could see a windmill in the flat lowland of the Netherlands. I couldn't see the swastika, but I knew it was there. The pressure gauge showed 20 feet of salt water above us.
Take her up. Take her up.
Climbed the ladder through the hatch, where an inflated rubber boat was waiting to take me to shore. I'm only a couple of yards from shore. I can get out here.
Hand me that rucksack, please. Here you are, sir. Have you far to go from here?
It's only about 5 miles from Markum to Bolsward, where my uncle lives. I can make it.
Goodbye. And thanks. Good luck. Good luck, sir.
When you rang the bell at sunup, I jumped from my bed. The devil, I said. It's the Gestapo. They finally put two and two together and connected me with the underground.
Hush, Brom, hush. God gave you a tongue. Must you use it so loosely?
I'm afraid my new Aunt Hilda doesn't trust me completely.
I trust no one these days.
Oh, Hilda, Hilda, this is Paul. How often have I spoken to you of the times he came here when he was... How old, Paul?
12, Uncle Brom.
Oh, yes, 12. And so proper, so correct. A miniature model of propriety. Well, from the looks of it, you've grown, but you haven't changed much. Still proper as the devil.
The result of my strict Quaker upbringing, Uncle Brom, remember? We were both taught never to drink or smoke or lie or swear, Uncle Brom.
Yes.
How long will you stay in Holland?
Only long enough to contact the leader of the underground and get the information I'm after.
I see. Tell me, why should we believe that you are an Allied spy?
Hilda!
Answer me.
Surely you don't expect me to carry proof about me that I'm a spy in case the Germans find me.
Then how do we know?
That's enough, Hilda. The devil, I say. I'll hear no more of this talk.
All right, Brom. It will be as you say, and on your conscience.
Your wife doesn't trust me.
You were surprised, no doubt, to find your Aunt Katrina dead and I remarried.
Yes, I was, Uncle Brom.
I was lonesome. It's not good for a man to live by himself. And she is a good woman.
But she doesn't trust me.
She has her reasons. There was a man in these parts not long ago. He passed himself off as a British agent. Gained the confidence of some of the underground. Then he turned them over to the Gestapo.
Oh, I see.
Hilda's family was among those executed. You understand now?
Uncle Brum, you haven't seen me nor heard from me since I was a boy. You don't know where I've been during those years in between. You don't know what my loyalties are. Do you trust me?
Tomorrow I will take steps to put you in contact with Hans Bock in Luaden, the leader of the Dutch underground.
When I awoke a few hours later, it was about 10 o'clock. Through the window of the spare room that Aunt Hilda had made up for me, I could see the neat little milk carts jolting over the Keistien and the cobblestones. And I could see the endless stream of bicycles. And here and there, a German soldier in uniform, like a blot on the landscape.
I'm afraid the breakfast is not as sumptuous as it was in the old days, Paul.
Do not apologize for what we cannot change.
Aunt Hilda is right. It was very good. The Rogerbrood was just as I remembered it. And these currant buns, these Krentenbrudjes, are wonderful.
Hmm. I will leave you. I have a house to clean.
You're still suspicious of me?
Have I any reason not to be?
Is that enough? Paul is my sister's son. I will stake my own life's blood that he is to be trusted.
Let us hope you do not have to.
Hilda!
Aunt Hilda. Look. This pistol. I'm giving it to you. It's the only one I have.
The only one you have? And you give it to me?
Yeah. I put myself at your mercy. If at any time you have proof, even the slightest, that I'm not what I claim to be, take my own gun and turn it on me.
I will take your gun and take you at your word.
That should convince her, Paul. You are what you say.
I hope so. Now, what about this Hans Bock? How can I get in touch with him?
I will arrange for a meeting between you halfway at the Harlingen, 5 days from now, to give him time to collect the information you are after.
The days until Thursday, when I was supposed to meet Hans Bock, passed slowly, but they weren't wasted. I set up the shortwave radio in the wine cellarette in the living room. I had long talks with Uncle Brum, and I went out of my way to win over Aunt Hilda. Are you sure there's nothing I can do to help you with dinner, Aunt Hilda?
Nothing. Thank you.
Oh, it's still raining.
One need not be too clever to see that. In Holland, it seems always to be raining now. Rain, mud, and despair.
I remember when I came here years ago. It was winter. I was in time for the skaters' races.
Yeah. Skaters' races.
And the booths. Remember the little booths that sold chocolate and milk cooked with aniseed? And the little cakes, all the varieties of gingerbread? Oh, how I loved them.
Hand me the spoon.
Here. Here you are.
Thank you. Tell me about America. What is it like?
It's too large to describe in a sentence or two, Aunt Hilda. When the war is over, you must come visit us.
When the war is over.
Well, it can't last forever. And America's helping. And remember, our leader, President Roosevelt, is himself of Dutch ancestry.
Tomorrow, perhaps I will make you a gingerbread cake.
Yes, I won her over slowly. And on Thursday, when I left for Harlingen, she said goodbye to me at the door with Uncle Brum.
You know where to meet him, Paul. You have everything clear?
Yeah, everything, Uncle Brum. I'm to meet him beside the monument of the stone man on the North Sea dikes. I'll be knotting and unknotting a piece of string so he'll know me.
Good, good. We will see you later tonight, then?
Yeah,
Paul. Here. This is for you. In case you should have need of it.
My pistol.
Take it back.
Thank you. Thank you, Aunt Hilda.
Good morning.
Good morning.
This habit you have of knotting and unknotting string, is it not a waste of time?
Nothing is a waste if it serves a purpose. Herr Bock?
Yeah, Lieutenant Alphonse. We meet this friend.
The information. Do you have it?
Yeah.
Where?
In my head. You'll have to memorize it as I give it to you. I could not take a chance of writing anything down.
I'll remember then.
Remember it and use it well. There are 40,000 Nazi troops in Holland and Belgium. But these troops will be on the move within 2 weeks.
Where are they going?
Northern Italy. They'll be used to cut off the American advance there.
The colonel did suspect the worst. Thank you. I'll radio this out tonight.
It is appropriate, is it not, for us to meet under the statue of this stone man? See the inscription?
Terminus.
Yeah. It means thus far and no farther. A threat to the sea that is held back by the dikes.
Thus far and no farther. A threat also to the Nazis?
Yeah. You understand me well. Remember me to your uncle. And goodbye for now.
Herr Bock is in constant danger of discovery by the Gestapo, Paul. That's why he could not take a chance and write that information down for you.
It wasn't necessary, Uncle Brown. He passed it from his head to mine.
When will you radio it to London?
It's after midnight. I think I can start now. What's that?
A car. Stopping in front of the house. There are three men getting out.
So late? Who are they, Brown? Do you know them?
No, I don't.
I'm afraid it was like this once before when I came to get my family. Paul, we were turned in then by someone who pretended to be a friend.
Aunt
Hilda, do you believe?
I don't know what to believe.
I'll answer it.
Herr Gerdemann.
Yeah?
We have business with you.
Come in. This is my wife and my nephew. Paul Halfond.
The nephew? Max, take a good look at him. Would you say he looks as if he's to be trusted?
I never trust a man who looks so innocent.
What are you talking about? Who are you?
Do not be so suspicious. We are from Hans Bock. We are members of the underground.
Underground? I was not conscious there was an underground in the Netherlands. What do you want with us?
You're being very careful. I can see that, Herr Kelderman, and that's good. And perhaps this will prove who we are. Would you not say that is Herr Bock's own signature?
Yeah, that is his, all right.
Mm-hmm.
I know it well.
You're convinced now. Read it aloud. Uncle Brown.
Let me read it, Paul. Have reason to distrust man you sent me today. Show proof who he is or turn him over to these men for underground execution. But this is ridiculous. I do not understand.
Nor I. Herr Bock seemed to trust me well enough this afternoon.
The nephew is a German spy, a traitor in our midst.
The devil he is. I do not believe that. Not Paul. He's not a spy, not for the Germans. You want proof? I will give you proof. See here, in the wine cellar. This is his shortwave radio. He was going to send a message tonight. He is a friend. He is an ally. He's a member of the American OSS. Don't you believe me? What is the matter?
We believe you well enough. Thank you for giving us proof of what we suspected.
What's this? Shall I show them my badge, Herr Commander?
Do that, Sergeant. Do that.
Take a good look.
The skull and crossbones.
The Gestapo.
We've been trailing Herr Bock, but we had no definite proof that he was connected with the underground. We only suspected. And today we saw him meet your nephew here on the North Sea dikes.
Why did you wait until now?
We figured that if we arrested them then and there, we might get nothing from them. So we waited. We arrested Herr Bock, And we found a paper with his signature on it.
That note you showed us was forged.
Quite right, Frau Kelterman. The note was forged.
Herr little Bob, by little.
Tell us anything.
Inch by
now
inch.
Now can no longer...
I have made my way to the kitchen door.
You have killed him.
Right again, Frau Kelterman.
And then around the corner.
For your husband for supplying us.
And up the back stairs.
The commander, yes, get out of here.
In a flood of memory, it came back. Chamber of horrors, an hour's drive from Washington. My mouth was dry as ashes, but the palms of my hands were wringing wet. Along the dark hall, my revolver drawn. Everything I had been taught led up to this. This moment.
We have you covered from both sides. Drop your gun.
Well, fire. Fire. Fire again. Into the darkness. But this time, there was no instructor to say good work, Paul. There was just a gun in my back and a leader of the Gestapo to say...
You are under arrest. Lieutenant Halfon. How long do you think you can hold out? We have ways of making you talk.
No, no.
Must we convince you more? Sergeant.
Ja, Herr Kommando.
Ja.
Well? Perhaps we'll have better luck if we question your aunt. Sergeant, get Frau Kelterman. Bring her here.
No, no, no. Don't do that. Let her alone.
Simply because you request it. Sergeant, do as I say. You'll see how long she holds out. If she is obstinate, we'll have a shot, and you will be a witness. You'll find this amusing, Lieutenant Halfon.
Oh, I know when I'm beaten. Don't bother the old lady or the old man either.
What are you saying?
Well, I thought I could hold out. I can see now there's no point in holding out. You've won. What more is there to say?
If you're just stalling for time...
I'm not stalling, Herr Commander. I'll prove it. I'll confess everything. Tell you everything you want to know.
Now you're becoming smart.
And so I told them everything they wanted to know. General Donovan hit the OSS in Washington. The OSS is part of the American State Department. The Minister of Finance in Britain is also head of the British Secret Intelligence.
Go ahead, Lieutenant Halfon. We're listening.
Corporal, take this down.
I gave them a mixture of facts and fantasy that would have done the German propaganda ministry proud. The two facts I told them, I knew they already knew. The rest they seemed to accept at face value. So I kept my story with a real whopper. You taking all this down, Corporal? Well, take this down with a red pencil. An invasion of North Holland is part of the Allied plan.
What?
The invasion will be made in the eastern area of Friesland on the Dutch North Sea coast.
You are lying to us. We'll see if you know you're beaten. Perhaps you've been on the wrong side, Lieutenant Halfon. You've set up a radio? I think you ought to use it tonight.
Now 2300. Paul Halfon calling headquarters. Can you hear me? Over.
OSS headquarters to Paul Halfon. You're coming in clear. Been waiting for your message, Paul. Good to hear your voice.
What did you say? You got a gun in your back.
I can see it's going to take a lot to convince you. Paul Halfon to headquarters. Listen. Listen carefully. It's stinking weather for a drop, but I've got to have supplies. It's darned important. Over. What the devil's the matter? You said you were getting darn good reception. I said the weather's lousy, but it's darned important that I get a supply drop at designated point tomorrow night. Can't make it any darn clearer than that. Over.
Okay. Okay, Paul. We get it. It's darn clear now. You'll get your supply drop. Good night. Over and out.
Well, you heard it yourself. The drop will be made. Are you beginning to be convinced of my sincerity?
Were you nervous, Lieutenant?
What? Why do you say that?
I never heard you use such language before.
Oh, I expect to get over my nervousness after I've broadcast many of these radio messages for you, Commander Brandt. After that, they drove me back to the jail. Commander Brandt of the Gestapo had never heard me use such language before. And neither had OSS headquarters.
the army, they used to make fun of me because of my proper speech. I gambled on the chance that the radio operator who knew me would detect something odd about my speech. When he answered back the same way, I knew he understood I was a prisoner of the Germans and that the supply drop would probably save my neck. I didn't sleep that night, and I didn't really take a deep breath until 11 o'clock the next morning.
Good morning, Lieutenant. Would you care, perhaps, for a piece of chocolate? An American cigarette?
I knew the drop had been successful. They sent us home. Uncle Brom, Aunt Hilda, and me. But we brought a boarder with us in the person of Commander Brandt. House was different now. Aunt Hilda prepared meals silently. Uncle Brom smoked his pipe and looked at me, wondering. And twice a week they sat in the living room and watched and listened as Commander Brandt and I contacted OSS headquarters.
OSS headquarters to Paul Alvin. This is important. 4 and 20 blackbirds are coming through the rye. Storm clouds overhead. Take in your washing. Good night. Over and out.
What does that mean? 15,000 more Allied troops are added to preparations for the invasion of Holland.
Well, maybe we'll rush 20,000 more German troops to the Dutch North Sea coast. Already we have 40,000 troops waiting there. We were going to send them to... elsewhere. But they will undoubtedly be of more use here.
Undoubtedly.
Yeah. I'll go up to bed now. Dankeschön. The dinner was very good, Frau Kelderman.
I can't help being a good cook.
Good night.
It's thoughtful of him to leave us alone so much.
Is it? I do not care much for your company.
Hilda, maybe he's got his reasons.
I wanted to tell them my reasons, but I didn't dare. Instead, I stood at the piano and played the scale with one finger. Even Uncle Brom was getting to the point where he couldn't look me straight in the eye. But as Uncle Brom became more suspicious, Commander Brandt became less suspicious.
I think I will go up to bed, too.
Something was wrong with the piano. The C was sharp, as if something were pressing on it, making it sharp. I walked around to the back of the baby grand, and I saw it. A small round disc, the size of an overcoat button. I knew it was attached to a dictaphone in Brandt's room. That was why he left us alone so much. I'd give him something to listen to.
Paul, I know there must be some explanations for these things you're doing.
Now look, you haven't had it so good for years. Eggs on the table. When did you have eggs on the table last? Privileges nobody else has. Extra ration books. You might as well face it. This is a new order, Germany's order. And if you're smart like I am, you'll fall in with them.
Paul, is this you?
I told you he was a traitor. A spy. I warned you.
You wanted to see me, Herr Commander?
Yeah, of course. Thank you for coming to my office so promptly at my call.
I follow orders.
So I'm beginning to see. Sit down. I want you to hear something.
I think I'll go up to bed, well, too.
I don't understand.
A dictaphone.
But I still don't...
Oh, I know there must be some explanation.
That's Uncle Brom.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Now, look. You haven't had it so good for years. That's me. Eggs on the table. Well, what's the idea of doing it on the table last? Privileges nobody else has. Extra ration books. You might as well face it. This is a new order. Germany
has convinced me completely.
If you're smart like I am, you're all in with them.
I have a proposition for you.
Yes?
I want you to go to England for us. Act as a double agent. You can be more valuable to us there.
Leave Holland?
Huh?
But aren't I a great help to you here?
I know the risk it involves. But Germany will pay you well after the war.
Think it over. I thought it over and let him convince me. And a few days later, a German stormtrooper gave me a personal escort to the border. And I made my way back from the enemy lines. After I left, my aunt and uncle escaped and were hidden by the underground. And it wasn't until the war was over that I was able to see them and explain.
Lieutenant Paul Halfand returned to OSS headquarters, and thousands of Nazi troops waited on the shore of the North Sea for an invasion that never came. Thus, once again, the report of another OSS agent closed with the words,
"Mission accomplished."
Listen again next week for another true adventure from the files of the OSS on
Cloak and Dagger. Today's Cloak and Dagger adventurer, Paul Halfond, was Les Tremaine. Brahm was played by Stefan Schnabel, Hilda by Virginia Payne, Bant by Barry Kroger, the Colonel by Raymond Edward Johnson. Others were Carl Weber, Jerry Jarrett, Arnold Robertson, and Bob Wilde. The script was written by Winifred Wolfe and Jack Gordon. The music was under the direction of Murray Ross. Today's true OSS adventure was based on the book Cloak and Dagger by Corey Ford and Alistair McBain. This program was produced by Lewis G. Cowan and Alfred Hollander and was under the direction of Sherman Marks. Programs, get your programs here. Mystery fans, there's an exciting evening waiting for you tonight on NBC. First, some listener will have a chance to win a double reward for solving the case on $1,000 reward. Next, when a woman reads her own obituary in the paper, the saint finds himself involved in a case that leads to murder. Then Sam Spade works his way through the rod and reel caper. Yes, you'll find adventure here tonight. Stay tuned now for High Adventure and the Big Guy on NBC.
That's going to do it for the Relic Radio show for today. There's old-time radio every day at RelicRadio.com, though. You can also find links to past episodes of this show and other shows like Relic Radio Thrillers, The Horror, Legacy of Laughs, all kinds of stuff you can find at RelicRadio.com, along with links to everything else we have going on, like forums, blogs, and listener communities, and shoutcast streams. Everything we have is at RelicRadio.com. You can email me at RelicRadio@gmail.com. Be back tomorrow with another episode of Case Closed and a new horror replay. And I'll be back next Tuesday with a new episode of the Relic Radio Show.